We are back for the 100th and first, did I say that weird? 101st episode of the Mod
Stand Podcast.
Airborne. That's right. 101st. That is, I forgot about that, man. That.
Well, he was 82nd, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He would have been 82nd.
But that, still, either way.
Either way, Airborne.
The day he was just raving at Chief Arnold. Lord.
Yeah, for our listeners who don't know who we're talking about, we did, was it on Veterans Day that we told stories? If you find that episode, I told a illuminating story about an old crotchety veteran that I took care of.
Who so long ago he was active duty that he called it the regular army.
The regular army. Like, sir, what year is it?
It's
like, tell us about when William McKinley got shot, will you?
Yeah. Tell me about the crossing of the by the invasion of the Redcoats or the Battle of the Redcoats on Christmas Day.
Yeah, tell us about crossing the Delaware River. The
Delaware River, jeez. All right, well, let's get these pleasantries out of the way. If you like what you hear at Mod State Podcast, hold on. If you like what you hear here at the Mod State Podcast, please go to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces, as well as links to the podcast and to our social media accounts. If you're on your mobile device, please scroll down to the bottom for all the links to the podcast. Thank you for tuning in. That's the end of the show. Thank you, folks, and good night. We'll see you. I feel like I'm getting...
You should drink a little.
Maybe, except for I just had a little bit of coffee, so...
Hey, a good speedball never hurt anybody.
Yeah, I guess you're right, huh?
You know, except John Belushi.
Just...
Chris Farley.
Yeah, well, we'll ask him now. Oh.
Mm. Well, they were, you know, Lord Humongous, if you will, so... Sure, it didn't help. But.
Yeah, well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I did say last week, or this week rather, that we'd be doing our geographical foray or mini-series. We have not put off the Great Plains, as many of you are probably just itching to hear me talk about ag country.
So we are going to just do a slideshow of... Just, Christian girls be like, here's your Great Plains.
Yep, they,
yep, they're all as vanilla as the next.
So this picture is Western Zing. Kansas. This picture is Western Kansas. All right, this is Eastern Nebraska. Can you tell the difference?
And no. Western Kansas?
Yeah, no, I actually can't tell the difference. No. It's hard to believe.
Eastern Colorado, my friend.
Oh, Eastern Colorado.
Looks like Kansas.
It's the same thing. Yep, they're all the same thing.
You leave Denver, go to the east, it's like all of a sudden this just drop off. Like, oh, what just happened?
Dude,
Dances with wolves all of a sudden.
Yeah, dances with wolves. I will tell you that there is nothing... I hope we don't have the majority of our listeners from Nebraska, but I will tell you that your state is just boring to drive through.
They don't have... It's boring, but they don't have the issues of corruption in Louisiana or New Jersey. They did have Tom Osborne, great football coach, great program.
Yeah. Well, I was almost going to say they don't have the same corruption issues, but it seems like it's Missouri that seems to have problems with their governor, not Nebraska. Missouri is actually not bad to drive through with the mountains and stuff like that. That's like Branson, Missouri is actually pretty.
I think that's St. Louis too. You really can't argue with that.
Yeah. So anyway, so they do have their share of corruption. They're
one of the original cathedrals of the blues with New Orleans, the Delta, Mississippi, and Chicago. So they get a pass.
They get a pass. Their governor, Eric Greitens, was just indicted on invasion of privacy charges. It's awesome.
Oh,
good for him. Felony invasion of privacy. embroiled.
How did he pull that off?
Let's see. He allegedly had an affair with a woman. This is the family values party here, folks. And then took compromising photographs of her to use as blackmail. Let's see. That always worked out.
Is she
really
rich?
Well. That's a good question.
Because,
why would you do that? Just keep your mouth shut?
There's only so many reasons you would blackmail. So what? If you were going to do that, then just have some goon threaten her.
Right.
Why would you blackmail somebody to keep quiet? You're disseminating information about a seminal interaction that you don't spread everywhere.
Wouldn't you have these photos and then you just be... Yeah, I did see what you did. You would just be incriminating yourself, right? Like, what the hell's the point?
So
Jesus, this guy's...
She's got to have money or something.
Maybe, I guess. Well, totally sucks. Looks like he's got two little boys and a wife, and I don't feel sorry for him for 1 second. But anyway, we are here because I think it's hard to walk away from the ongoing debate that we are having in this country right now. Really kind of interesting to see young kids. I remember being... what's that?
What one?
Well, the Parkland, Florida kids that are at the White House that talked to Donald Trump and then had their...
The gun violence debate.
There's
a million debates going on.
There
right
is
now.
A million. The hot and heavy one right now, the gun debate. And I don't think that the point of this episode is to necessarily discuss the Second Amendment, because we've done that ad nauseum. However, there's been... I think more than anything, there's been more questions asked of me recently about my viewpoint on a specific topic. And I don't know if that's because of doing podcasts or what the deal is, but...
You're the sweet one.
Maybe. That's right.
You're the sweet one.
And I feel that there's almost a bit of responsibility that comes with actually having a fairly articulated viewpoint, but it becomes difficult when you have a centrist viewpoint on things, because what you wind up doing is you just talk about both of the arguments and then have no solution. And I don't know if that's necessarily what people are looking for. However,
don't be a fence straddler, Nate. Pick a side and die for it.
God, that's what everyone keeps saying. Pick a side and die for it. Well, like,
you know what it is. Go forth.
All right. Well, I really don't have a side to die on, because if there's any topic that I feel like anyone should have cognitive dissonance over, it is the Second Amendment. And at least for me, when you actually engage people in conversation about the Second Amendment and how they feel about its historical past of interpretation, and really, ask people with more of a left-leaning view on the true idea of slippery slope, of the slippery slope pertaining to the Second Amendment, you really start engaging and having a fairly disarmed conversation, it leads to a lot of really interesting, thoughtful conversation. But when we don't allow, I guess when we don't allow for that thoughtful conversation, we just become incredibly defensive. And, the Second Amendment just seems to be one of those conversations where we do have those barricades. I think other topics akin to that would be abortion. That's obviously a real hot topic, but I think even immigration plays into that a little bit, but I think there's a little bit more moderate viewpoints on that. But anyway, the point of this, I guess, I feel like I'm going to do a really good job of being a bit hypocritical maybe on this, not hypocritical, but contradicting is probably a better word. But I had some conversations with some folks, like I said, and one of the person that texted me had asked the question, how do you feel about this? And he gave me how he felt about it. And we're friends, so, obviously, go ahead. And I'm actually interested.
What was this?
What's that? This is talking about the gun debate specifically. So he asked the question, he posed the comment rather, I do believe that, and I'm paraphrasing, so if he listens to this, I'm paraphrasing this. He said, I believe that we do need to have the right to retain weapons to actually protect ourselves from the government. And I know he's not crazy. I know he's not, you know, a doomsday prepper and has half of his basement full of ammunition. That's not it at all. He just says, fundamentally, I do believe that we need to preserve the Second Amendment for the protection of the broader community against our government. And I don't know if maybe it's just because I'm argumentative by nature, but I propose
progressive by nature.
Maybe. But you know, I don't know
that's
that.
Cool. I mean, you do you.
Thanks. I will. My issue was, so what I said back to him, I said, he also alluded to the fact that he would be afraid that, or he almost thought that it was inevitable, if this were to happen, where there would be a gutting of the Second Amendment, that we would be, there would be an almost an inevitable path to the Orwellian state in 1984. To which I replied, I just disagree with you a little bit. I'm not saying that there, that the slippery slope argument for the Second Amendment is not valid. I think it's very valid. However, I think in 2018, the concept of the government moving towards an Orwellian 1984 state would look a little bit different from the way Second Amendment is it idealists? Is that the word? Or Second Amendment
originalists,
I
must be the original intent crowd to, versus the living, breathing document crowd. More into the latter. Not saying you don't value the Constitution. I'm not framing it that way.
Well, and this is what's funny about this conversation that we're having is that if
you and I, or you and he,
you and I, right now, just to, as a side note, to say, just because I believe that there may be room for a bit of interpretation to the Second Amendment or the Constitution in general, doesn't mean that I don't value the Constitution. And I think that's where we're breaking down in our society right now, that if you just believe that, look, I think there is value to, looking at the Constitution, digging into the Constitution and finding the flexibility that may be there, it doesn't mean that I don't value the Constitution. However, that's getting off track. When I say that I believe that I'm not trying to make this sound like a conspiracy podcast episode, but this, I mean, just bear with me here. And I mean that.
So do you see, real quick, a little side part here. I want you to finish the Second Amendment bit. But do you think then that George Orwell, originally known as Eric Blair, didn't know what the hell he was talking about in 1948 when he wrote that book? You know, I mean, they had tanks then, because I kind of see, we've discussed it a little bit precast, but I can kind of see where you're headed with this. Do you think he didn't foresee that?
Well, whatever imagination he had,
He's God. I mean, not everybody has that as their favorite book like I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of mine, of course. I guess maybe we'll just go down this road here. It's good because what I had proposed to...
I'm not trying to be contrarian.
No. I think
there's a little further down the path here.
Absolutely. And I think we'll dive into that and I'll set what I was talking about. So when I say that I believe that the world would look, or the United States would look, a lot different today in 2018 than it might have looked in 1780, 1790, early 1800s. When this bill was created, when this amendment was created...
Sure does.
Yeah, it absolutely does. When this amendment was created, it was a protection against a government. They just come out of a war, a revolution rather, and they saw the value of protection against an authoritarian type regime or a monarchy, whatever you would like to say it, call it. However, 2008,
an oppressive state,
indeed.
It doesn't matter the form of government.
Yes. So, but let's just paint a picture here of what 1780, 1790, 1800 looked like, even the
war. You realize that's the whole point here. though. I mean, please continue, but I don't want to jump into the Fourth Amendment just yet.
No, I mean,
go ahead. But
I agree with you. So other than the War of 1812, where a superior navy actually played a role in victory, your opposition, your op four, as they would call it in the military, looked very similar to you. Maybe they had, I mean, the clothing was pretty much similar. Maybe one person had a slightly more superior weapon, but they were all shitty front-loading muzzle loaders. And really, I mean, because they were so equal, all the difference it took was guerrilla warfare and not adapting to the current fighting style during the time during the Revolutionary War. There was a fairly even playing field. If you had food, if you had a little bit of shelter, and you had a fairly ample supply line, you did pretty well. You could, and of course,
Napoleon hadn't changed the world yet.
Exactly. So obviously,
using the same equipment.
Yes.
Mind you,
yes. So I mean, of course, economy of force plays into that as well. If you've got a lot of people, mass plays a role, right? If you've got more people, unless there's a few.
Not that was on his side.
Exactly.
France was way outnumbered by Europe. But anyway, continue.
So. Fast forward to today in 2018 and maybe even 1948 when George Orwell wrote this book, the battlefield looks a whole lot different, okay? There is, and being in the military, I'm just being realistic here. I do see the value of needing self-protection, the protection against our government, but let's be very realistic about what that would look like. Let's pretend it's you versus the whatever U.S. military that's going to occupy the town that you're fighting in. Yes, there's tanks, there's air power, there is surveillance, there is technology at their hands. There's, I mean,
intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Exactly, Scud missiles, Tomahawk cruise missiles.
Yeah,
I mean, just you name it. If you, what are you going to do with your gun? What are you going to do with your AR-15? It doesn't say that I'm not saying that we don't need the Second Amendment. I'm just saying, let's be realistic what a U.S. military occupied United States would look like. There's not a chance. Even if you had your entire basement filled with AR-15 capable ammunition, how long are you going to last? And where's the solvency in that plan? And you could go and run around and create another base or do, you know, zombie apocalypse style, whatever, you know. We're talking about 350 million citizens. 345 million of them are probably not going to have this plan of attack. And even if you could hole up on your mountainside with an AR-15 plinking away at the people advancing up the hill, then the forward observer from 3 miles away gives a grid square that a bomb's dropped in your house. I mean, I'm not being conspiratorial and I'm not being crazy. This isn't a video game. This is what would happen. So the battlefield looks a lot different than it did when they crafted this document, you know, hundreds of years ago. So with that in mind, I do see what you mean by a reasonable right to protect yourself from the government. However, okay, let's be realistic. What are you going to do? What are you actually going to do?
I'll tell you before we move on to the Fourth Amendment issue.
Yep.
Well, first and foremost, the right to bear arms and to be a part, the other part of the Second Amendment, for once I don't have my little pocket constitution, Bill of Rights with me, my amendments with me. But the other part is referring to a formed militia.
Yes.
And that's, you know, contrary to popular belief, that was not intended to refer to the national military. No, it meant what it said, a militia. Local men being, at the time, it was men, banding together for common self-defense, because the Continental Army was a joke.
Oh, absolutely.
When we first revolted, okay? George Washington was a genius in the sense that he knew he couldn't win, so he had to stay alive, okay? So this right is not about the ability to win. It is not about whether, because you're alluding to how sensible would such a fight be. Well, I'm pretty sure a lot of rationale goes out the window when it comes to one's own threshold, one's wife and children, or whatever, your husband and children. I'm not excluding any one group. I'm just getting at what the original argument was, which I believe holds true.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not getting into whether or not one should be allowed to have sarin gas in their basement. That's not what we're getting at.
Yeah, here. And that's a weird slope when it comes to interpreting the Second Amendment as what is an arm. But we'll save.
So I'm not going to get into the semantics of whether one could win against a modern force. I think that was one of George Orwell's points, because a lot of people don't know this about the man behind the pseudonym. Eric Blair, a.k.a. George Orwell, was a socialist. A lot of people don't know that. And he was arguing against what he saw was the inevitable expansion of the state. Well, again, plenty, and I know you're not crapping on all lost causes or whatever, but plenty of causes that are lost are some of the best worth fighting for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to say you, as an individual, you and your friends, you're not going to defeat and occupy, you know, the United States Marines come and occupy New Orleans, I'm not really sure that's the entire point. Is, well, this right will be maintained based upon your likelihood of victory. If that was the basis, we would have never revolted against the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I'll give you
that. We never have won.
I mean,
the Viet Cong, bunch of bamboo thatch hutches, defeated the United States military last I checked in the 1970s. So if they had believed odds of probability, I guarantee you, if you had asked John F. Kennedy if he thought whether we were going to run riot over the Viet Cong, he would have laughed at the suggestion otherwise.
Yeah.
So the point is not in whether or not one could use this force to defeat the United States government in the need of its in case of its exercise. The point is that one must have that right, because without that right, there comes the, well, how else, at the end of the day, when you have a King George, or when you have a Saddam Hussein, when you have a Fidel Castro, it's like, you know, the Cuban immigrant farmer that testified in tears before the local township saying, you people don't know what freedom is because you never lost it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I do,
not whether I think I could defeat the U.S. Army.
And call me a fatalist here. However, if and I realize that it's retaining your right to have a well-formed militia, but if the U.S. military is occupying, or the one-third Marines is occupying New Orleans, what sort of deconstruction is happening at a federal level where that person, the person who is running that, even gives a shit about the Constitution? I mean, that's kind of...
Do you think that's the point? Again.
Well, it's... I mean, if...
You know, so there's already... if the machine breaks down, you and I stop giving a damn.
No, it's not. Basically. Yeah, I see your point. And I'm not...
I'm not... I don't presume to dictate duty to you.
No, absolutely.
I'm simply responding to... I guess in a way, I'm coalescing with your friend's point.
Yeah, absolutely. And The slippery slope argument is it's a fascinating one to have.
And the school kids out there that are protesting, you've seen it the past 3 or 4 days, they would all be throwing objects at me right now, or I, a speaker in their school auditorium.
Absolutely.
I've seen the speeches being given. I know why I'm on the losing end of popular opinion here.
Yeah. And you know, I think someone would look at me and go, well, this is the actual type of voice.
You were a spokesperson for the popular opinion right now. There's nothing wrong with that, Nate, because I know you. I know how you believe. What scares me is the people that are getting paid by God knows what interests aside from George Soros to make those arguments.
Fair. That's fair. So,
anyway, sorry.
No. Because I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying to cut you off from making.
No, you're really, not. You're not. We've really, both been,
yeah,
going
really,
back and forth. It's fine.
Really well articulated argument. And a lot of this, what I'm saying right now, I mean, it is a bit of almost like a devil's advocate, because I do agree with the fundamental structure and written word of the Constitution. I mean,
there's a greater argument per precast that you wanted to tie this into, and so that's
so maybe we're working it that way.
Well, so, I know you. I know you're not trying to cut down original intent and say, well, nobody needs him. I know that's not what you're driving at. Please don't take my response that way.
Absolutely, I'm not. So I think a good way to... If I was being a spokesperson for a type of majority, or a majority of individuals in the United States,
majority of people under the age of 35.
Sure, absolutely.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I would also say, if I could be their spokesman and I could articulate it well, I would say something along the lines to the other side of, listen, well-formed militia, check. right to bear arms, however we define that, check. What we really want is just something in place to help with damage control, to do some mitigation so that American citizens, our brothers and sisters, do not continue to be mowed down and sacrificed for the stupidest cause that's in someone's head. And we're not asking for a gutting or a deconstruction of the Second Amendment. I mean, look, in Australia, post Port Arthur, they did a involuntary seizure of weapons, and they sort of did some re-regulation. And you know what? There's actually more private gun ownership in Australia than there was before Port Arthur, and that's not taking into that is taking into account for population. So there are ways forward. What we want is some damage control, something we can put into place. We don't know. It's all precedent, right? We're creating precedent here. We're creating precedent. We don't know if it will work or not, but we're not asking for something that's going to create a slippery slope.
I think you should write and I'm being serious here. I feel that you should write a 2 to 4 page op-ed describing what such a bill applied to the United States would look like. And no, I'm not being a smart ass saying, well, they've got X amount of animals that are so venomous, they're, you know, from birth in the egg sac is spiders, you know, they're going to kill you. You know what I'm talking about. There's so many. It's like Australia was designed to kill its inhabitants.
Yeah, I feel you.
I'm not making that argument.
No. Anyway.
There's a certain amount of this is America. So how would you do that? I suppose my proposal is, in light of my argument that you couldn't do it any sooner than you could make the U.S. into a global soccer power overnight. It's too damn big. There's too many people in too big of an area. That's kind of where I'm coming from with that. I think it would be fascinating to hear from you.
Yeah, and you know what? I can craft that. I guess it's sort of like I'm making the argument that
you've got 6 months to do it.
Yeah, 6 minutes. So, I mean, months. 6 months to do it. Okay, thank you. That's much better. I mean, the argument here is, or the issue here is, I'm saying, well, what's the point of having it if we're never going to be able to protect ourselves from America, or our American military, or whatever coup we might have. Or the other side is, well, America's too big, so what's the point of even trying it in the first place? I mean, this is where we sort of have these juxtapositions, and this is not just us. This is the greater, narrative in the United States.
We are America.
We are, very much so.
We better damn well hope we are, at least, that people can at some point say, hey, yeah, that's the kind of discussion we should have, because neither one of us is, at this point, at any point in the past, been angry with the other and made personal attacks.
Having
a ping pong effect here, and that's... Yeah. Yeah.
So I just did a... go ahead. Yeah,
you continue.
I just did a video, which will go up on the Mod State Facebook page, actually addressing that... a bit, and just the idea of that's what we've been talking about for the last 100 episodes, is having some sort of civil debate. But anyway, moving from here, then, this is where we take a little bit of a turn, and and it becomes a little different. So the part of this discussion, disclaimer, is not to pick what amendment is more important. However, what amendment actually, if the current happenings surrounding the Fourth Amendment, to me, are more troubling than damage control regulations to the Second Amendment. Does that make sense?
Which is tantamount? Which is more expedient? Or which should we more expediently address, given your concerns?
So that's a good question. Obviously, there's this completely emotional, horrific tragedy that just happened. But when it comes down to, here's the way I'll propose it differently. I believe that the situation that I'm going to talk about or articulate is actually more problematic than if we're talking about the collapse of the Republic, the United States of America.
Going back to your friend and colleagues, that believe
that we need guns to protect ourselves from the United States.
An existential threat to our republic.
This is more of an existential threat to our republic than any sort of regulation you could impose on gun regulation. Anything. I really, truly believe that.
A more existential threat?
So, again, I proposed, or I had you think about the difference between America in 2018 than 1781. Or 1791, when this bill was created, this amendment was created. Mm-hmm. Today, we have blatant disregard for the, as we saw with Edward Snowden and during the Obama administration, a blatant disregard for the security and privacy of American citizens. And we saw that with mass surveillance from the NSA. And we, our Fourth Amendment, I mean, I think you could make the argument that our Fourth Amendment rights were violated. The argument that I want to make is that I believe that a fight for America, the fight or the decline to an Orwellian authoritarian state, doesn't happen on the streets with soldiers. It happens on our computers, it happens on our phones, and it happens in a cyber capacity. That is more, and so now this is where we go even deeper. Without digging into it too much, when you have something like the repeal of the Smith 1 Act or the Propaganda Act, coupled with the I say this very loosely with quotations, the deregulation or the repeal of net neutrality, you create a far more, or you create an Orwellian state much faster, and there's no gun in the world that's going to protect you from that. What are you going to do? Shoot your computer? Okay, great. Like, that's, and so when you have a country or a government that says, listen, what we can do now is take all propaganda directed at foreign countries, foreign adversaries, or for maybe even allies, and we can use that on the American people on television, radio, social media, internet, and any other channel that comes to your ears. And then possibly do away with net neutrality, where now we can create fast channels and slow channels and send whatever sort of propaganda we want to your computer.
So you believe that the pen is mightier than the sword?
I do believe that. And I think history shows us that. I think there's good examples.
I think it does.
I think history can show us that.
Look at how powerful the Emancipation Proclamation was.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a game changer. I'm amazed they didn't think of it before the war. It's like, what, were all your strategists in Washington drunk?
Yeah, right. But
I mean, maybe they were, but...
So to elucidate more on that, I mean, that sounded very fear-mongering.
No, but I mean, bring that home from the perspective of being, well, if you can't get the truth about what's going on, how would you even know if troops were entering your hometown to come seize your guns?
Very true. But that's what it does. I mean, in the advent, what has been more destructive? Well, I don't want to say more destructive because life versus information is a very different thing to people. But information.
Well, if you can't get a girl's phone number, how can you ever marry her and have kids?
Exactly. So it is a chicken and the egg kind of scenario here. If you don't have information, if you don't know, there's chaos that ensues.
I don't know. I think there's a sort of moral abstention now of not introducing more humans into this failed experiment. Please continue.
Yeah, fair enough. Intelligence or information versus life. I mean, I think most people can be very clear about which one they would pick, and it's generally life. And that's why talking about this and even making the comparison isn't sexy and almost downright insulting. However, I guess this argument is more or less proposed to the purist or the originalists of the Second Amendment, where I say, listen, I'm not necessarily picking one amendment over the other. I'm not saying that the Fourth Amendment is more important than the Second Amendment. I think we can all agree that the First Amendment is probably the most important. But there are more existential threats that really run us or can drive us quicker and closer to this Orwellian state that we're worried about than a few regulations on guns. I think that's the argument. And by proposing exactly what I said about the repeal of the Smith-Mund Act and the more or less repeal or the doing away of net neutrality, that is the perfect, it's a perfect insidious weapon to, and of course I realize I sound like a conspiratorial freak right now, but
well, imagine the times in which the Smith-Mund Act, the Propaganda Act, it was nicknamed, of 1948, that it was born at. We had just seen what happened in Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and Soviet Russia, then what would take over the People's Republic of China, still is in power there, North Korea. We rail against these states, Cuba. Well, how does that happen? It doesn't happen overnight.
No.
Blood was shed, but the scary thing about the Smith Modernization Act now, I mean, we'll get into details further,
but
pair that with the potential, it's going to be caught up in federal court. Just remember who's appointing the judges right now. Those things paired together, the really frightening thing to me here is that not only did this happen, you had a Republican Congress or a Republican House, a Democratic Senate, and then President Obama signed it into law, so this was a bipartisan thing.
Yeah, it was absolutely bipartisan.
But even the real blood-curdling thing for me here is that this sort of change could happen in this country overnight without so much as a shot being fired.
Absolutely.
And so it wouldn't matter 6 weeks down the road how many guns you have or when things really got bad because you wouldn't even know.
Exactly. I mean, you literally would not. I mean, it would be fake news or propaganda, whatever it is, and you would have no idea. You legitimately would have no idea. Now, I think that's where people say, well, as a proponent to the Second Amendment, well, I'm glad I got my guns when they come knocking on their door. But why would they?
How are you going to know when you need to use them?
Exactly. What? Who's going to be knocking on your door?
How are you going to be able to tell friend from enemy?
Yeah. No one needs to knock on a door. It's going to serve very, very limited purpose.
They have scouts in the infantry for a reason.
Yeah.
You have intelligence services for a reason. You have counterintelligence for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, your guns become fairly worthless. I really do believe that.
If you don't know where your friends stand, I mean, you could be hitting them for all you know.
Exactly.
You know, good intel.
I mean, so anyway.
So, you make a very strong point. You've elucidated one.
Well,
I agree.
Thank you. I was afraid that I would be, you know, pitting one amendment against the other or
no,
being
that's not what I heard.
A bit, not hypocritical, but... maybe being counterintuitive between two different points, but obviously we haven't dug as deep, I think, right now on Fourth Amendment stuff. But it is certainly not as sexy to talk about. But I don't want people to lose sight of everything that is important, not just put blinders on. And I think it's important to get certain things done. I think that the voice of individuals fighting for a cause, whether that be regulations on weapons, quote unquote, assault weapons, military style weapons, I think that's fighting a good fight. And
Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Some of the finest causes one will ever engage in are from an outsider's end of the day perspective, a lost cause. But I maintain, you look at, as I've talked to you about before, I've encountered some individuals, many of which belong to an evangelical persuasion that did things that, you know, ridiculed and made an issue out of me listening to Elton John in my own car or a car that my father owned. I'm like, okay, the hell out of here. But, you know, this same crowd, I spoke to a group of these gentlemen in Visalia, California. Now, when it presented, I mean, it was a private setting, but if I had started up about the Second Amendment, for instance, they would have waxed. They would have pontificated,
yes,
ad nauseum, just for hours on end, and talked about who had buried weapons in what field. I'm not kidding. It's a real thing. But if I were, and I did actually bring up this issue long before I started really digging into the research. We're talking about right after I got out of the military. This was spring, summer 2016, right around the time that Mod State came into existence. But started talking about the repeal of the Smith One Act, the Propaganda Act, and all this. And these are intelligent men, but their eyes very quickly glazed over. And they didn't see the value I don't want to say they didn't see the value, but there was nowhere near the degree of uproar because it wasn't on their street. You know, these are individuals that are very passionate living in the state of California about immigration and, you know, all that. That's something that they can point out and say, you see, it's us and them.
Yeah, it's
They look to me like, okay, well, why aren't you talking about stronger stock issues? I'm going, okay, you can overlook this to your peril, but in my opinion, you can kiss all the rest of that goodbye.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're locking down slowly here are the fairly important topics that we feel should be the highest priority that maybe are not, because like the picture that you just portrayed there, there's a lack of tangibility. And when they're talking about Second Amendment or immigrations, there's tangibility to that. And
I'd love to hear what that group of men, as I told you before, they were the ones railing about John Boehner.
Oh yeah.
So how about if we go back to Nancy Pelosi and they were all opposed to that? I'd love to hear what those men think now, going, oh, well, how about Paul Ryan?
Yeah, right.
I bet there's some closet John Boehner fans in the Republican Party of Tulare County.
Well, it's might as well not pine for something you're never going to get again.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and they would never have the humility to admit that to me. God forbid.
Yeah, exactly.
Catholic and all. Yeah,
yeah, boy. Well, you know what? I think we put that issue to rest. It certainly was a...
For now.
For now. Yeah, well, that exactly for now.
Till, you know.
But
next week or a month from now.
Yeah, whenever. I just think it's interesting that my sort of viewpoint geopolitically, I'm always sort of approaching things from a macro perspective, and it becomes difficult to not... I have a hard time reprioritizing... I sounded drunk when I said that. Reprioritizing issues when
I think it was kind of sexy the way you swung that.
The way, oh, thanks. You mean the way I slurred my words there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was very Wanda of you.
Well, anyway, it's hard for me to reprioritize what I do find more alarming, but unfortunately, the things that I find more alarming just aren't as tangible and aren't as sexy. But yeah, they sure will be one day when it all comes crumbling down, but I don't know.
Right, hopefully we can prop the mast up, if you will.
We'll do our best.
Hopefully it'll become a little sexier once we introduce the visual.
Yeah. Well, hopefully y'all can find my mug over at Mod State. Check out the video, and hopefully it doesn't sound too propaganda-y, if you will.
We'll see what crappens.
Sweet, I like it. Well, my friend, it's always an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. It's been a true honor and a distinct privilege.
Indeed, my friend. Same. So until next time,
bye-bye.
We'll see you.